Thanks to dramatic occurrences on some college campuses in advance of appearances by some guest speakers, and to a large extent President Trump's aggressiveness towards certain newspapers and television networks, many are fearing a chill in the realm of free speech in the U.S. Psychologist and linguist Steven Pinker isn't necessarily one of them, but he does think it's a good time to reiterate that free speech is fundamental. He was in the Valley recently to speak at ASU's Tempe campus, and I had the opportunity to talk with him. I started the conversation by asking him just how pure the concept of free speech should be.
I believe that free speech is fundamental, an example being what you and I are doing right now. There'd be very little point to it if you could just shut me up at any moment if you didn't like what I just said. That, of course, free speech isn't absolute, and that's been recognized in centuries of jurisprudence on the First Amendment. We make carve-out exceptions for libel and fraud and extortion and bribery, incitement to imminent lawless action. But I argue that we have to keep those as carefully circumscribed exceptions, and that the default, all else being equal, is that that speech should be not punished, should be free. This should be true for society at large, and it should be true on university campuses above all, which get many privileges from society as forums in which the important issues of the day and of all time are broached and evaluated.
When you make the distinction with college campuses, is there a feeling, do you think, at all, is this something new that people will complain about, or is it maybe a generational thing? In certain campuses, the concern is that, okay, we're getting to a point where we're really moving into our own corners too much.
Absolutely. The only way we can make progress in understanding anything is if ideas can be advanced, articulated, and evaluated. A lot of them are going to turn out to be wrong, but since we're not omniscient or infallible, we don't know what they are until we have a chance to say them and allow them to be evaluated and criticized. Many of them might even be painful, but that's sometimes the truth hurts. And the fact that a belief may be experienced as hurtful doesn't mean that it's false. It might be true. And beliefs such as that, for example, children do fine if they go to daycare as opposed to being brought up by a stay-at-home mom. That was considered hurtful. Or that gay people make perfectly fine teachers and should even be allowed to marry. That was considered highly offensive. That African Americans should not be segregated from white Americans, threatening the Southern way of life. Just about any important idea was hurtful to someone when it was first broached. So we can't use the fact that someone is offended as a reason to shut down the speaker.
So not exclusively, but it sounds as though what you're saying is that without free speech, it's very hard to make progress.
Absolutely, and which of course ties into one of my obsessions, the existence of progress. But free speech is itself a kind of progress that makes further progress possible in the sense that it's not intuitively obvious. Now, it's obvious to me that I get to speak, and it's obvious to you that you get to speak, but what isn't so obvious is to me that you get to speak if I don't like what you say. That is, we human beings tend to think that people who disagree with them are either evil or stupid or both. Now, since people disagree about everything, that can't be true of everyone. Not everyone is stupid. Not everyone is evil. There can be mistaken beliefs. There can be honest disagreements. And acknowledging that, saying that even though what you say is, I think you're totally wrong, I think you shouldn't be saying it, the idea that you have the right to say it nonetheless, that is an accomplishment of, I think, the 18th century Enlightenment. It's always in danger of being eroded as we fall back on our natural impulses, and very much worth safeguarding.
Do you feel like you're swimming against the tide a little bit more now than you had in the past? Obviously, many people are agitated about President Trump.
Exactly. And if we had a political regime that could censor speech that was hurtful to Trump supporters, we would be in really hot water, or supporters of anyone. I don't want to say that it's the generation in college campuses now are necessarily worse than my generation, the baby boomers, because there are an awful lot of intolerant baby boomers in the day, too. And there were speakers who were deplatformed and were picketed and shouted down and drowned out and assaulted. But certainly there have been a number of highly publicized incidents that should make us deeply concerned. because some of the speakers who have been drowned out, sometimes even assaulted, even if one disagrees with them, sometimes I do, but they are serious scholars. They have arguments for their positions. If they're wrong, then we've got to show why they're wrong. But simply having it so that the loudest person gets to win is not a route to finding the truth.
Would it be fair to call you an optimist?
Well, I borrow a term from the late Hans Rosling, who said, "I don't consider myself an optimist, but I'm a serious possibilist." It depends on what we do.
Well, so how does that affect your outlook? The new book, Enlightenment Now, there's certainly remnants of a feeling that humanity has actually done pretty well in many ways, even though many of us tend to focus on some of the negatives or the idea that things could be better if we treated each other better or if we had more vision or if we weren't so materialistic, whatever it may be. Do you feel like there is enough evidence out there to convince people that we have in fact made these great strides? And do enough people respond to evidence or do people respond more to emotion?
Well, they respond to both, but clearly respond to emotion and mythology and tribal solidarity. On the other hand, we don't believe in unicorns anymore. We don't burn heretics. We don't throw virgins into volcanoes to get better weather. We don't believe in miasmas as a cause of disease as opposed to germs. So we do make progress on the basis of evidence, not all of us at once, but it can filter down from a core of people who know what they're talking about and who then show that the fruits of scientifically valid beliefs can lead to everyone's benefit, and slowly the consensus can get put into place. My argument in Enlightenment Now is not that we should have a sunny disposition or look at the glasses half full. It's we should know what the facts are, and most people are just unaware of the facts of human progress. They don't know that the life expectancy in the world today is 71 years. They don't know that 90% of people under the age of 25 are literate. They don't know that extreme poverty has declined to 9.6% of the world's population. They don't know that this decade is has seen the greatest number of democracies in all of human history. So these aren't looking at the world through rose-tinted glasses. These are just looking at the facts. And the problem is that our intellectual and journalistic culture doesn't look at facts often enough. They look at least not facts about long-term trends. The facts that we tend to look at are what happened yesterday.
That's psychologist and linguist Steven Pinker. I spoke with him recently at ASU. He's the author of the book Enlightenment Now.